You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Witchcraft historically has been used sort of pejoratively in the same way that paganism was used as a pejorative term. I think it really is, when we're looking at Western, largely Christian societies, it is anything that doesn't fit that standard of Christianity. And so it has been used to weaponize anything that is a little bit different, any rituals that are different, any practices that are different. And that encompasses all over the world because there are a lot of different forms of witchcraft or what people would consider witchcraft.
Welcome to the True Fiction Project, a podcast series that explores the origins of fiction. Every week, we begin with an interview, nonfiction, followed by a creative piece, fiction, inspired by something from the interview. The idea is to demonstrate, of course, that fiction is born out of our life experiences. Now, here's your host, storyteller, author, public speaker, health and wellness expert, Renita Hora.
Welcome to the True Fiction Project. I am your host, Renita Hora, and here we are in the season of the witch. I have to say, this is one of my favorite seasons of the year, not only because I like things witchy, but also because perhaps my birthday falls in this season. Does that make me a witch or give me witch fantasies? I don't know. That's one I'm going to have to think about. Anyway, I want to introduce a storyteller of witch fantasy. This is Emma McDonald. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the True Fiction Project.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
And it is great to have you here and have to ask you right off the bat, what is witch fantasy? What do we mean by that?
So for what I generally mean by that is, I think fantasy as a genre has a lot of magic involved in it. And I think when we talk about involving witches in fantasy, it is a little different because I think it plays on the magic systems that have kind of decorated the folk tales of our world a little bit more. So you might delve into types of magic that might be a little bit more familiar, so to speak, to people in our world or based in certain traditions, things like that. Whereas I think fantasy as a larger genre, while it does include a lot of magic, doesn't always necessarily carry that component.
Mm-hmm. So what got you into this? What were you doing before?
I have worked a lot in corporate settings, actually, so very far removed from what I do here. But I don't know if you can see behind me, I have a little bit of a witchy setup myself. That is something that I've always had a very keen interest in. So it was kind of a natural leap into writing about that in fiction.
I see. Now, we have to delve into this a little bit, you know, the background of witchiness. From what I understand and having known about witches in different cultures, I'm from South Asia, I'm from India, and certainly here with the Salem witch trials and so forth, these were witches, like ordinary women, let's say, who were sort of blamed for psychological mishap and evil, and so became witches because that's the way society labeled them. It's not that they were actually sort of conjuring spells and stuff. They were just seen to be sort of weird and not main members of society. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely correct in that. I think witchcraft historically has been used sort of pejoratively in the same way that paganism was used as a pejorative term. I think it really is, when we're looking at Western, largely Christian societies, it is anything that doesn't fit that standard of Christianity. And so it has been used to weaponize anything that is a little bit different, any rituals that are different, any practices that are different. And that encompasses all over the world because there are a lot of different forms of witchcraft or what people would consider witchcraft now. And I think that's something that people are starting to kind of revisit in recent years. And it's gaining a lot more momentum now as something that's a little bit outside of tradition.
So that leads me straight into that question of what is witchcraft in that case?
I think it can mean a lot of things for a lot of different people. I know some people have it as sort of a daily practice that they might do. It might be tied to specific religious beliefs for some people. And it really, I don't think there's any one set answer of what witchcraft can be. I think it is so varied in so many different places to so many different people. I think the witchcraft that I write about a lot in my book, or that I kind of dabble in myself, is more geared towards what would be called green witchcraft, which deals with a lot of plants and herbs and anything of that nature. So making tonics and tinctures and teas and that kind of thing. And that is something that is, again, has historically been done by humans for centuries, millennia. But when you get into the fringe of society, the women, because often it was women who faced the brunt of accusations of witchcraft, making tonics and tinctures and kind of that sort of thing took on a life of its own, I think, when we talk about it now.
So tonics and tinctures, I'd love to know more about your witchcraft. What is it? And why it's necessary to have that witchy setup?
For me, I think it's my witchiness has just always kind of been a part of who I am. It's something that I've definitely embraced a little bit more in recent years, but I've had people telling me that I'm just a little bit witchy for as long as I can remember. And so for me, that often presents itself as gardening, and I collect herbs. And so if you can see in the witchy setup that I have behind me, I don't know if you can actually see my herb collection there, but there is an extensive dried herb collection included. And so those are things that I work with, and I make little tinctures and tonics for people. So for example, I'll make a valerian root tonic for people who have trouble sleeping or staying asleep. And that can really help with insomnia. And it's not the type of thing where I would say, take this and don't go to the doctor. And, you know, you could only have to use what I make, because I think it's something that could be used supplementally alongside modern medicine, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is very interesting, because so much of what you are describing sounds to me like the work of a medicine woman, a pharmacologist, right? Or you mentioned supplemental medicine. If I go to a natural grocery store and look at the line of supplements, I can find perhaps things like valerian root tonic or tincture. So if you are preparing those at home by hand for folks like me, why is it that witchcraft, and if that's what witchcraft is?
So there are a lot of forms of witchcraft that I think are more tied into belief systems for people. So I've known a lot of witches who also are in the pagan community. So they will worship older gods or gods outside of Christianity or outside of larger recognized religions. And I think that's more where historically the accusations of witchcraft were more burdensome. But really, I mean, at its height, you mentioned the Salem witch trials or any of the witch trials that happened through England and Scotland as well. At its height, it was just targeted at women who were a little different. So we have the word hedge witch as well, which is generally just a woman who would live past the hedges, so beyond the village kind of thing, right? So she's a little bit of a social outcast. And that, at that time, would have been enough to make that woman a target. So it isn't, I think, so much about the practice itself that people had an issue with. I think it was the eschewing of traditional values or what they believed people should be doing. And people, again, largely women, who didn't fall into that model, it didn't really matter what they were doing. It was just that they weren't doing the things that they were supposed to be.
The things they were supposed to be. I remember an old friend from elementary school who I got back in touch with after years said to me that she had become a witch. There must have been a look on my face because she looks at me and she says, "No, no, no, but I'm a white witch."
Yeah, I will say I don't necessarily define witchcraft or witchiness in that way, but I think that term actually comes from, I want to say that's a Wiccan tradition. Wiccans tend to be viewed as like with white magic or good magic, which I think, again, sets up a dichotomy that has problems of its own, right? Where if you're dividing these things into, well, white magic is good magic and safe magic, and black magic is bad magic and unsafe magic. Like that can become very problematic very quickly. And I think it also is very limiting in what witchcraft can include. And, you know, it, again, which is kind of funny because witchcraft is at its core, I think, the idea of breaking out of those boxes of tradition. It's almost like trying to fit that back into traditional values or something that's more easily digestible for most people.
So you're going to read to us from your debut novel. It's a novel, yes? Whispers Most Foul?
Yes.
Can you set it up for us? What led you into writing this book and what is it about? What's the true life inspiration behind it?
Besides me being a bit of a witch myself, the novel is set in a magical university in a fantasy world. So it follows the journey of the main character, Rose, who is the only student at her elite magical university, Dunhollow Academy, who can't cast a single spell. And when she starts her third term, she quickly realizes that she alone can see the ghosts of some students who had gone missing in the previous term. And when one of the ghosts turns out to be her greatest academic rival, Sylvie, the two have to reluctantly pair up to figure out what's going on. Are the students enchanted? Are they dead? Is there some strange magic behind this? And as they delve deeper into their university's history, they uncover some dark secrets and some secrets of their own as well.
All right. Dark. We are all fascinated by the dark. Why are we all fascinated by the dark?
I think it's that people love to flirt with the unknown, that mystery. There's something just innately human about wanting to reach for those mysterious places.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating how we, as you say, want to flirt with the unknown, yet we fear the unknown. Mm-hmm. And there is this fine line. It's almost like it's the ultimate gamble, the ultimate risk.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that line, maybe because I think everybody flirts with that kind of darkness in their own way. I think it's the people who embrace more of the unknown. And that's where they kind of get the label of being on the fringes of society. Because when you start really existing in those spaces, I think that's where people start to grow uncomfortable.
Very interesting. Okay, before we segue into your reading, let our viewers, listeners, readers know where we can find your work, online, offline.
Yeah, so I am on Instagram, TikTok, and X. So on TikTok and Instagram, my username is emmamacdonald_author. And I also have a website, which is emmamacdonaldauthor.com. So try to keep everything uniform so it's easier to find. But I do tend to post updates and little, you know, snippets of the story and on Instagram, little visual elements and stuff. So if anybody's interested in that, they can absolutely follow me there.
Thank you so much, Emma. We are going to include links to all of your websites, social media handles, and whatnot in the show notes. And then I know you've got something a little extra special for our paid subscribers. So if you haven't hit that paid subscription button already, please do so, because Emma is going to give us a little bit more. Emma, thank you so much for joining us today on the True Fiction Project.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here.
That is Emma MacDonald, the author of Whispers Most Foul. And I'm your host, Renita Hora, and happy Season of the Witch.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now to the premise of the True Fiction Project, which of course is to create fiction out of nonfiction.
Rose glared at the bathwater below her, glimmering in the glow of the candles lining the bath's edges. Warm and inviting, steam curled off its surface in smoky tendrils, filling the air with the soothing scent of lavender. Hot baths had always had a way of soothing scars upon the heart. Raw and aching, or sewn up and sore beneath the weight of time, they all melted away in the water's scalding embrace. But now, she could think of nothing less appealing. A shiver crawled down her spine. As horrific as the first week of classes had been, nothing pulled so sharply at the dread coiled in her stomach as this. Her eyes flickered to the dark cloth hanging over her mirror like a shroud, a useless precaution at this point, but a habit she found hard to break. She'd covered the lancet windows above the tub, too, repositioning her many hanging plants in front of them as a protective wall of overgrowth. Still, it wasn't enough. She knew now that none of it would protect her. Aveline was always there, no longer confined to mere reflections and growing ever stronger, angrier. Yet what choice did Rose have? She could hardly keep from bathing indefinitely. The wind howled lightly against the windows, nearly covering the screams from the forest beyond. Pulling loose the tie of her robe, Rose sucked in a sharp breath and gingerly tipped her toes into the water. The heat crept across her skin like a warm embrace as she sank into it, but she found no comfort in it. She sloshed her water up and down her arms, scrubbing her washcloth over her rosemary soap and then across her pink, freckled skin. She just needed to get in and out, then make it down to the pub for the first week drinks, for Fen's sake. He hardly expected her to show up, she was sure, but for the first time, she almost wanted to. He'd been watching her all week as if she were made of cracked glass, ready to shatter at the slightest touch, and perhaps he was right, but there was a desperate, broken part of her that wanted to pretend, just for one night, to watch his eyes spark with delight for the sight of her, not concern, as they so often did these days. She swallowed hard, washing away the last of the soap. The weight of it all ripped her apart, but she would keep it from reaching him, if she could. Setting her washcloth aside, Rose was reaching for her towel when the water at the edge of the tub splashed. She froze. A few rebellious curls stuck to the back of her neck in damp tangles as a cold sweat crept across her skin. Gripping the edge of the tub, she clenched her jaw. Seconds ticked by with agonizing leisure before the water sloshed again. This time, the candles beside Rose flickered almost in warning. The soft hair on her forearms stood upright as a chill swept over her, despite the steam still curling up from the bathwater. All at once, the water seemed tepid and stale. What little joy it had held snuffed out in an instant. Rose reached for her towel once more, suddenly desperate for the safety of her bed. But the candles flared again as she did, singeing her skin before they all went out at once. Rose's heart pounded against her ribs in the darkness, fast and feather-light, like a bird trying to break free from the cage of her chest. Her breath coiled in her lungs, throat so tight she could barely swallow. Water lapped softly against the porcelain tub. Then, with a start, the first of the candles leapt back to life, but the light brought no relief. Gray, bloated fingers curled around the sides of the tub. Cracked nails caked with grime screeched against porcelain, dug deep and dragging, 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 ever so slowly. Rose trembled, tears pricking her eyes as the water parted, but she couldn't look away, couldn't move, couldn't even breathe. Soaked tangles of ragged blonde hair crested slowly through the suds, then pallid flesh, marked by dark, spidery veins carved up a sparse brow. Then finally, her eyes. Bloodshot and sunken, they fixed furiously on Rose as Aveline's cracked lips pulled free of the water. Blood pooled at the corner of the girl's mouth, spilling down her throat. For a moment, they just stared at each other, Rose rooted to the spot and Aveline simply waiting, watching. And then she lunged. Slick fingers clamped around Rose's throat and squeezed, hard. With a cry, she wrenched away from Aveline's grip, scrambling back. Water cascaded over the edges of the tub as Rose leapt free of it, soaking the rug beneath and snuffing out the one lit candle. She stumbled in the darkness, reaching desperately for her towel, then the counter, then finally the door. The glow of her dormitory greeted her as she flung herself toward her bed. She sagged onto it, towel wrapped tighter against her bare skin and trembling in the cool air. For several moments, all she could do was watch the doorway, but it remained empty. No bloodied eyes peered at her out of the darkness. No wretched figure crossed the threshold. Then, all at once, the candles flickered back to life, filling the washroom with a soft, inviting glow. She was gone. Numbly, Rose lifted her knees to her chin, released the breath burning in her lungs, and simply wept. Great, aching sobs tore through her, hot tears pooling onto the satinette duvet as she rolled onto her side. She couldn't bear this any longer, this terror, this torment. If she stayed here another moment, she would simply unravel, shatter into a million pieces, or fade away with so much sorrow. All of a sudden, she craved the comfort of other bodies, even if the safety they offered was only an illusion. For the first time in memory, she didn't want to be alone. And so, dressing quickly and freeing her tangled curls from their updo, she fled from the confines of her room. It wasn't until the cool night air pressed against her skin that she noticed the heat beneath her collar. Swallowing hard, she reached under her blouse and traced five angry bruises blooming along her throat.
Here at the True Fiction Project, we are always looking for great stories that make for compelling fiction. So, if you have a great story or know somebody who does, Or if you are a writer who would like to contribute, then please do get in touch with us at renita.com/contact.
Thank you for listening to the True Fiction Project with Renita Hora. Be sure to subscribe to the newsletter to receive more inspiring stories showing how fiction is born from our everyday experiences. For more information, visit www.truefictionproject.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.